Hello, my name is Vanessa Vallely and I'm CEO of We Are Tech Women. I'm delighted to introduce She Talks Tech, which is a podcast which brings to life the personal experiences of women and men working in tech with a focus on diversity, equity and inclusion. We also include the odd technical topic to keep you abreast of innovating areas of tech that may be of interest to you. So this is a brand new season, season six, and we're delighted to focus on a number of incredible women looking at their career and sharing their top tips for success. In this episode of She Talks Tech, we hear from Nadia Al-Ramli, VP of Engineering at HubSpot. Nadia currently runs the Marketing Hub product line at HubSpot, but is very much a techie, her own words. She started out her career in video games, building back-to-back end services for the Call of Duty franchise. So welcome, Nadia. Thank you for joining me today. I'd really like to start talking about your career and how you got into tech in the first place.
I guess maybe just to explain for some context. So I was born a Palestinian refugee in Syria. So that is an important context because I never really had any citizenship growing up, but luckily being in Syria meant I can still have some of the Syrian rights, so some of the citizen rights. I was still able to go through the normal education channels, etc., as a Syrian citizen. And growing up, I was really into math. I was into science, but there was no computer science degree existing. In fact, I did not even have a computer. I had no idea about the world of tech at the time growing up in the 90s. And I think in my, say, mid-teens, mid to late teens, my parents during a summer put me in a class to just learn how to use a PC. I was so intrigued. I was really curious. It was not enough for me to learn how to use the PC. I wanted to learn how it actually worked. I was really curious. I kept asking the instructor, and the instructor had no idea. He'd tell me, I genuinely cannot answer your questions. Told me that I should really look into studying something related to it, but it did not actually exist. That was not an option for me to study if I were to study in the country. Again, you know, bear in mind, this is like middle class in a third world country. Literally, my only path is public education, public universities. That's really the only thing available. Luckily, a year before I get into university, into Leaving Cert, we did get computer science, started a computer science program. And that was my dream. That's all I wanted to be. I wanted that so bad. In Leaving Cert, I got grades to get into like anything I wanted, medicine, etc. And everyone thought I was making a big mistake. They thought I was making the biggest mistake. My mom was trying to talk me out of it. My relatives, even when I went to put my choice in, the person at the desk said I was making a big mistake. I should just tear that paper and put in something else. They said, just like, that is a big mistake. Why would you go into something unknown like this? There was a lot of misconceptions. People thought just because you can use a PC, you don't need to study to study programming. They were saying, oh, my kid cannot know how to use it. Why would you bother? It was so funny, but I was so set on it. And one interesting thing is my class had 40% women. So at the time, I didn't even realize there was any shortage of women in computer science at all or tech.
So there seems to be more of a shortage in the Western world. When you look at, say, for example, Taiwan and places like that, it's 50-50. So what is going on over here? Any ideas?
Me neither. I've been always very curious about it. I never really have a great answer for it because, you know, I was the second on my class. The top of my class was another woman. Like the women I knew there really loved it as well. So it was not like, you know, I don't think anyone was particularly forced to go into it. Now, I want to say, though, a lot of people in Syria go into their degrees based on what can get you better jobs. And it was still considered lucrative. So definitely a lot of people aspire to go into computer science. So yeah, I graduated from the second ever class in Syria from computer science. We didn't even have internet, going into it. I think I had internet in my third year in college, dial-up, of course.
So the perception is that that must have been quite kind of difficult growing up in a war zone and trying to kind of move yourself forward to achieve so much. Was that the case?
It was pretty peaceful, honestly, at the time where I grew up. However, it was very poor, poor infrastructure. It's way worse right now, obviously, than it was at the time. I studied in a public university. It's the fourth public. So if you rank them, it's the fourth even. It just happened to be the one in my hometown. My parents would never have let me be out of their sight. So I just studied where it was available to me. And, I had times where I was ashamed of it. I had people tell me, oh, you've not graduated from a top university. And you know what? That's what was available to me. And I made the best out of it. And I'm just really proud of that fact.
So tell me, where are you based now, Nadia?
I'm based in Dublin, Ireland.
So tell me a little bit about that journey from Syria to Dublin.
So I've been living in Dublin for 16 years now. So it's been a long while now, and an Irish citizen as well. My first citizenship, in fact. I graduated from computer science. I started working remotely with a U.S. startup at the time. That's before the sanctions on Syria. So I was still being able to get paid, etc. So I worked. It was actually quite lucrative working remote at the time, when on dial-up as well. I don't know how I even managed to do that, working remote on dial-up. I was doing really well, like really, really well, considering the wages around me. My husband, we met in college. So we were both trying to, consider maybe studying elsewhere, etc. But as luck struck, he got a sourcer from Google reach out to him. So he eventually went through the interview, got an offer from Google. Notice we both studied in the same public university. He actually passed the Google interview. So we chose to move to Ireland. We had a lot of other choices. We could have picked Zurich, Sydney, San Francisco, Mountain View, and Dublin. And honestly, we chose Ireland because it was English speaking, closer home, but also we were not going to be discriminated against being from Syria. There were, at the time, sanctions were starting against Syria. It was getting really rough. I was actually starting not to get my pay anymore because the startup, they could not transfer money into Syrian banks anymore. So I was unpaid for a few months until I moved to Ireland, in fact. And I applied to work in a company called Demonware, which was a wholly owned subsidiary of Activision Publishing, which is a very large video game publisher. So that's how I started. That was 16 years ago.
So let's talk about leadership, because obviously you're a VP at your company. What do you think makes a good leader? And is it a case that you've looked around you and you've drawn inspiration from other individuals?
So I'm really inspired by Francis Frey. She is a Harvard lecturer and an author of one of my favorite books. It's, I have a signed copy on my desk. It's Unleash the Unapologetic Leader's Guide to Empowering Everyone Around You. I was in a program where Frances was giving us a lecture, and just something she said, a framework she said about leadership, honestly changed me as a leader. So this happened about 3.5 years ago. And I feel what I was as a leader before and now is a different person, in my opinion. I think the difference is that I always thought what it meant to me as a leader is how I see myself as a leader. And the way she put it is how you are seen as a leader. So a great leader is someone, from their employee's perspective, should be someone that really care deeply about you. So deeply invested in your success. So you should feel that your leader is greatly invested in your success. And you should also feel that they're holding you to a high standard. You should feel that. Yeah. Combined together, that's what makes a great leader. It's just something clicked, just really something really clicked in my mind. I recognized that the people I looked up to had those characteristics. They're people who really made me feel that they care deeply about me. At the same time, they hold me to a high standard, held me to a high bar, and I felt it. And that combination absolutely works.
So obviously, every leader is only as good as their team, or that's what I believe. How have you built the teams that are around you?
So to me, you build teams like around great leaders as well. So to me, my mission is applying the same thing to the leaders around me. So they should feel deeply that I'm deeply devoted to their success, and they should also feel that I hold them to a high bar. And I make it known that's my intention as well. So they should give me feedback if they don't feel one or the other. And they all push me to hold them to a higher bar. Believe it or not, I never have someone telling me, hey, you're pushing too hard. They always tell me, oh, hold us to an even higher bar there, Nadia. Like, I want you to keep pushing me harder and harder. I want to do more. And to me, strong leaders, it's important in our profession, not to also have people leadership only, but you also should be very technically strong yourself, that you can do the job of your reports if needed, but you're not doing it. You just really deeply understand it. So you have that empathy, that understanding, and you can also help them solve their own problems. So in HubSpot, we don't hire pure people managers for the roles we have. Instead, what we do is we have a great onboarding process where we start as engineers first. We start as engineers for 6 months, where we go code, not actually manage any people, and learn from the ground up, and then take on our responsibilities. I love that. It builds this empathy, this understanding. It builds actually more trust with the people around you as well. They see you can actually do the job if needed. So when you have people like that, that have both the understanding, the technical understanding of the systems, and also strong people leader, you can really build great teams around them, and they propagate the same thing to people reporting to them and so on. So right now in HubSpot, I have an org a size of 120 engineers.
Wow.
But only 4 reports. So I have 4 direct reports, 120 engineers. They have their own reports, and so on. And it's just all built in from within. I regularly do skip levels where I talk to my reports. So that would be about maybe 26, 27 people. Okay. And it's just such a glowing, like there is always like, I feel so supported. I love what I do. I feel like my manager cares about me. It really works. So that's how we scale. You see, I can't possibly have done this without having strong people around me.
So we all have our challenges in the workplace. What do you believe your biggest challenges have been from a leader's perspective?
So you see, first, I think I need to explain a little bit about my history going before HubSpot to explain what built me up as well. So, you know, I didn't suddenly start as a VP. When I started as a software engineer in video games industry. And for those that don't know, video games industry have an even less representation of women than general tech companies, like much, much less. I was the first woman they hired in the subsidiary I joined, studio I joined. I think they had something like 30 people, and I was the first woman. The first woman in engineering, they had the office admin was the other woman. So just 2 women in a company of 30 men. I think one of the interesting thing growing. So, and then, you know, I grew in my career. The company grew as well, but it grew in my career over, you know, from a software engineer to senior engineer to tech lead, team lead, manager, senior manager, director, senior director before moving to HubSpot. I had a bit of a trial by fire in some times where I had managers, a long series of managers who were great, have great intentions, but not great managers themselves. You know, there's it takes certain quality. So a lot, most of them hated being managers. Many of them hated it, actually ended up leaving to be ICs again, individual contributors again, because they just hated it. So that meant I had no great role models. I had to learn by doing. And that meant making mistakes along the way, burning myself out, basically trying to learn what not to do first. And that was quite a challenge, but it made me who I am. I don't regret it. I feel like it really helped. But that is definitely a challenge. Moving to HubSpot, I joined, I was a senior director in Activision. Moved to HubSpot, I joined as a director. There was no senior director level. And that was quite a different industry, different environment. A bigger company, more mature in processes, much more diversity. And it opened my eyes that, hey, actually, it is possible to have more women. It also opened my eyes to realizing some things that I thought were normal were not normal. It's normal to be the only woman in a leadership meeting of 50. It's even like some of the practices, you know, in kind of old style corporates, they rely a little bit more on intimidation just as a practice to hold the bar high, but there are much more modern and better ways to hold a high bar without bullying or like, obviously that was not great, but I thought it was normal. I thought that's what would happen when you're at certain levels. As I moved to HubSpot, I'm like, wait a minute, that is not how it works at all. You can actually have great empathetic leaders and still have a high bar.
So the solution that we're all looking for is to improve gender diversity within the company. Where do you think that begins?
First, you want us to focus on the sourcing, where you're getting the people from, right? Diversify that. And when I was interviewed in HubSpot, what struck me is that my interview panel was 50-50 women and men. It was very diverse. I felt, wow. And I asked the women there and they loved it. And that was like another sign, you know, you start with sourcing, then with recruiting, ensure you're tracking those metrics. Then after you bring in the woman, you need to start looking at their retention, right? And you want to make sure they're also progressing. So making sure you're on top of your data, doing your analysis, making sure that it's all done right.
So we often talk about mentoring being the silver bullet for women. Have you ever been mentored or have you mentored others?
I honestly never missed a mentoring opportunity in HubSpot. I've mentored as well outside. So in HubSpot, I mentor. I mentor a lot. To be honest, like every opportunity I get to make it scale, because, you know, if I were to do ongoing one-to-one with every person I mentor, may not be able to do anything else. The way I do it is ad hoc. So I say, okay, let's make sure we have an ongoing relationship. You reach out to me in Slack with topics and then we schedule something. So we only schedule a catch up when you have a question, you have something we want to discuss, and just make it very purposeful. Like, what is our goal? What are we trying to get out of it? I've also been mentored by a lot of people. One advice I would say is there's no one mentor for every situation. There's no one mentor for every stage in your career. It's actually, in my opinion, you should have multiple mentors and you want to come in prepared. You have your questions, you have your agenda. I would not expect my mentor to know my goal. I would make my goal very clear what I want to get out of this session and that conversation, and that worked really well for me.
Nedi, you've built such an incredible career. You know, the hurdles that you've had to overcome are simply amazing. So other people may be listening and thinking, oh my God, I'd love to follow in Nadia's footsteps. So what piece of advice would you give to them?
I would tell them, don't be afraid of going into tech at all. Believe in yourself. And if something doesn't look right, then it's not right. If something doesn't sound right to you, then it's not right. Really research the company you join. Looking glass doors, talk to other women, reach out maybe in LinkedIn to a woman that worked there and ask them about their experience. Go into any company knowing what it's going to be like. I think that's really important. Look at the diversity, their diversity reports. Ideally, larger companies, definitely they have a diversity report, show more role models. When I ask women, why did you go into tech? At least in West, I noticed a lot of them is because of role models around them. I did not have a role model go into computer science. For me, it was different, but I think it's different for everybody as well. I do believe, though, if I had a role model, I would have a lot easier choice. I would not have had probably the pushback. If I did not have a strong personality, I might have backed off from going into computer science, and having a role model definitely would have helped. I think one thing I want to say that if I were to like look to my younger self and think about something that would have helped me out, I think early in my career, I mentioned I was the first woman in engineering and the first company I joined in person. I was dismissive to the impact of that at the time. When people come to me and say, hey, you know, how do you feel about being the only woman? I'd be like, it's fine, you know, like, didn't matter to me. You know, I felt it was fine. Like, what's the big deal about it? I noticed I would put a lot more pressure on myself to stand out. I wanted to not rely on anybody. If I were to like, even stuff like, you know, wanted to move my monitor from one place, I would never let a man hold my like heavy equipment, because like, no, I need to prove myself. I can be just as good as every one of them. At the time, the Call of Duty swag only came in men's sizes. And like, they didn't have anything that would fit me, would just look too large. And they would say, just give it to your husband. And I was happy about that as well. I was like, yeah, great. You know, my husband, it's like a gift to him. That was all normal to me. You know, that kind of thing where like, yeah, it's fine. And yeah, I realized later, you know what? No, I think I would have had a lot better experience if I had more women around me. It does actually make a difference. I think I just needed maybe having more women around me would have helped me realize that.
Nadia, thank you so much for today and for talking to me. It's been such a pleasure to hear your story and meet you.
It was absolutely a pleasure, and I love everything you do as well.
Nadia, thank you so much. I cannot thank you enough for being my guest on this episode of She Talks Tech. And thanks to all of you for listening. We really appreciate it. If you want to find out more about Nadia, you can connect with her on LinkedIn. Please do subscribe and rate the podcast and give us that all-important 5-star review. And keep tuned to our channel for new episodes of She Talks Tech.